You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. We have a pope. Now, here's the thing. We don't know yet who it is, but the minute that we do, I'll tell you. But the thing that I've been scratching my head about for some time, and this kind of goes back to, actually, I first really became aware of this back in the late 90s. I think it was 98, 99, might have been 2000, whatever the year was. It was right around there when I was invited to Rome, to Italy, to meet Pope John Paul II, and which was, you know, just an extraordinary thing. I've talked about it on the air and in the past, and no need to rehash it at length here. But, you know, Louise and I spent the day, we got a guided tour of the Vatican by one of the Pope's staff. And then we were driven up to Castle Gandolfo, which is where Pope Benedict, Pope Emeritus Benedict is hanging out today. It's this palace mansion, you know, surrounded by castle wall, I guess. On the edge of a giant lake that used to be a volcanic crater up in the, about an hour and a half, 2 hours north, as I recall the drive, of Rome. And, you know, that's where we met Pope John Paul II. And I was very impressed by John Paul II. Watching his career, when you meet somebody like that and it leaves an impression and you start paying attention to who they are and what they say and what they do. And I continue to think of him as, you know, just a genuinely extraordinary man. The question, though, that struck me when I was there was, why is the Catholic Church a country? The easy answer is that the Catholic Church is the remnant of the ancient Roman Empire. The Roman Empire never went away. It simply changed its name in the arguably 300s to 600s after the Second Council of Constantinople in, what was that, 333, I think. Whatever the year, I'm not a... That timeline, you know, I can give you American history timelines off the top of my head. That one I'd have to look up. But in any case, as the Roman Empire was disintegrating, the Roman Catholic Church stepped into that space to the point that until the most recent Italian Revolution, the one of the, I think it was either the late 19th or early 20th century, the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church, actually controlled and ran much, if not most, of Europe. I mean, they were a military force. They had an army, they had a navy, they conducted crusades. That was back in the 12th century, 13th century, 14th century. So the easy answer to why the Catholic Church is a nation is that they're arguably one of the oldest nations on earth. I mean, right up there with China, you know, is like in terms of continuous, you know, this is our place, this is our land, these are our, or Russia, or, well, England. Well, actually, England had been conquered by the Romans, you know. So who goes back to ancient Rome? The Greeks, not continuously. So that's one answer. But when the Italians overthrew the Catholic Church and basically isolated the Catholic Church into Vatican City and said, okay, you can have Vatican City as a country, but nothing else, and you can't have an army anymore. That was part of the deal. The Catholic Church continued to be a country, and they are recognized by the UN. In fact, they're on the UN's, or I don't know that they are this year, but they certainly were at the time that we went to Rome. A decade ago, they were on the UN's Council or Commission on Women's Issues Worldwide and on the UN's Commission on Birth Control, which struck me at the time as odd because it was at the time that we were there, all of the legal citizens of the Vatican, and there were, I think, fewer than 1,000, as I recall, were men. So now that may have changed. It may be that they've allowed nuns, women, to become citizens of Rome. I don't know. But they're having state status, I think, frankly, is not necessarily the best thing for a church. And I'm curious your thoughts on this, particularly if you're Catholic or you're well informed on this issue. I've had I had several long conversations about this with Brother Wayne Teasdale. This was the year after I had met the Pope. I was invited to meet the Dalai Lama, and Brother Wayne had helped put that together. He was a very good friend of the Dalai Lama's. Wayne died just a couple of years ago. And I wrote a blurb for his book, The Mystic Heart. He's a brilliant man. He was an instructor at the Catholic Chicago Theologic Seminary. It was the seminary in Chicago where they teach priests how to become priests. Wayne was one of these guys. 6 months out of the year, he did that. And 6 months out of the year, he was a follower of Father Bede, who was a Catholic priest who started an order in India where they literally, they're penniless. I mean, it's sort of like what St. Teresa did with the Carmelite order back in the 15th century. For which she was persecuted. She wanted the church to basically take a vow of poverty, and she did with the Carmelites. And St. John of the Cross was supportive of her efforts, and for that he was thrown into a closet and beaten so badly his ribs and shoulders were broken. He was deformed for the rest of his life. And It is not. Okay. We don't yet know who the new Pope is. So in any case, Wayne and I used to, you know, we spent a week together in Castel Gandolfo, and we also both used to teach seminars at Omega Institute in New York State. And we'd hang out when we were doing that. Wayne was just a wonderful man. And he gave me so many insights into the brilliant, absolutely brilliant, progressive tradition and mystical tradition of the Catholic Church, or of many parts of the Catholic Church. And I don't want to speak for Wayne. I can't do that. He's not around anymore. I don't know that he's ever addressed this in public, but this issue of the church being a state, being a nation, and so its senior officials have diplomatic passports. Oh, interesting. Cardinal Bergoglio of Argentina. And he has taken the name of Pope Francisco. Okay, so we have a new pope. We'll have the details on him after the break as we gather some information. In fact, Jim, we'll, if you can drop in the fund drive for the in a minute. Well, in any case, so getting diplomatic immunity, being able to hide people from prosecution by other states, having a seat in the United Nations, the Methodists don't have this. The Lutherans don't have this. You could argue that the Church of England does in a way, in that they install the Queen, but the Church of England really doesn't have a seat. You know, the Episcopal Church does not have a seat in the United Nations. Is it time for the Roman Catholic Church to say, you know, we're a church, we're not an empire anymore? Interesting question. I just, you know, that's the one that's been rolling around in my mind all these years. You know, among others, but I say that with the very best intentions and hopes for the church.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. More of my thoughts, your thoughts, and who the new Pope is and what he's all about right after this. This portion of the Tom Hartman Program is underwritten in part by Stamps.com, 1-800-Flowers.com, Carbonite.com, and EdisonFactor.com. Okay, so, you know, the Catholic world, I guess the entire world, because the Vatican is a nation state. the Catholic Church is also a nation state. You could argue that it has a new pope, and it is the former Archbishop of Argentina, Jorge Bergoglio, and he is taking the name of Pope Francis, or Francisco, I guess, would be the Italian, but it says the Associated Press has anglicized it to Pope Francis. Well, or maybe they didn't anglicize it, maybe they just got it wrong. I don't know. We're getting it, but in any case, 1.2 billion Catholics around the world being led by this fellow. So, and Catholics around the world, very, very happy about this. Apparently this is a good guy. And, you know, it's the details of, you know, who this fellow is, what his politics are, how he has, you know, positions he has taken on world issues, on Catholic issues, on church issues, all of this will be, you know, coming out as time goes on. I suppose you could argue that Jews have a state in Israel. There's a Jewish seat in the United Nations, but Israel doesn't make any pretensions to represent the world's Jews, to the best of my knowledge. And you could argue that there are several Muslim states, Islamic republics, they call themselves. One of the most recent is the one that we created, Iraq. Islamic Republic of Iraq, after we toppled Saddam Hussein. It was a secular republic. And, but again, there's not a particular mullah who is, you know, hi, I'm the Grand Poobah. So, anyhow, we'll see how this plays out. The new Pope Francis, or Francisco, is coming out now to, and greeting his flock. Francis the First? Is this the first Francis? That's very interesting. You know, St. Francis of Assisi was one of my favorite. There's this book called The Little Flowers of St. Francis that I read when I was a teenager. And it's a collection of short stories about St. Francis, written, many of them by people who knew him or at the time that he was alive, which was, as I recall, in the 1400s, 1500s, some long time ago. And he was, you know, sort of like St. John and St. Teresa. And we actually named one of our kids, her middle name is Teresa, after St. Teresa of Avila. St. John, St. Francis of Assisi was a mystic, and he was persecuted by the church. So it's fascinating. I don't want to read more into this than that, but it's fascinating to see that the new pope has taken on the name of Francis. I'm guessing it's Francis of Assisi. And if so, I mean, St. Francis of Assisi was famous as a man of peace. He was, in fact, what he was condemned for by the church for when he was alive was for basically being a pantheist or an animist. In other words, he saw the presence of God in all living things. And that wasn't allowed back then. You know, wait a minute. No, you want to talk to God, you go to the church on Sunday and, you know, here, eat this wafer. So, anyhow, Joe in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Joe, you had some thoughts on the Vatican as a nation and the history of it?
Yeah. I guess you could say I'm a former Catholic. I kind of got away from the faith. I'm still a practicing Christian, though. But the interesting thing about, if you want to learn a lot about the background history of the Catholic Church and how it got to be the way it is, and kind of some issues with church, with Christianity in the whole, is look at a very good film called Constantine's Sword, or read the book even better, made by a ex-priest. It's a real good book, and it describes the history, but I'm a pretty good church historian, at least an amateur one anyway, and I can tell you that if you want to look at the origin of where the Catholic Church comes from, it's not from really, I guess you could call, a biblical place, because it's founded by the Roman Emperor Constantine.
Right. This is the second Council of Constantinople in 333, wasn't it?
Right. And basically, he's like, oh, I saw a vision of a cross over the battlefield, says, oh, yeah, I'm going to win this. So he goes out and battles the other part of Rome that still wanted to be whatever.
Pagan.
And basically, he takes over, says that, all right, the cross, we are now officially Christians. And
right.
They get rid of all the churches. And
now, there's,
get all the
Joe, there's another history that Elaine Pagels talks about, I believe, or maybe it was Peter Funk. It's been some years since I've read this stuff, but I was very much into it at one time, which suggests that the reason why the Roman Empire went Catholic or became the Catholic Church or adopted Catholicism or Christianity was because they couldn't suppress it any longer, was that it was just spreading. The Pauline Church, you know, the original 12 disciples of Jesus, that church died out, the Peter Church. And the Pauline Church, the church started by St. Paul, was really growing aggressively in that part of the world, and the Romans just, you know, they got tired of killing them. Makes sense.
Yeah, I guess there's. Oh yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I think I've read that book too. I can't remember who wrote it either, but it's a very fascinating history.
Yeah.
But I think one of the issues that underlies the church, especially with the election of a new pope, and I'm glad it's not somebody from Europe. Be quite honest, I think they need a fresher perspective than the European perspective, is that you think about it from a biblical perspective, Jesus didn't run around trying to conquer people or take their lands or raise an army.
Right.
And if you really think about it, everything that Vatican City in of itself and the Catholic Church as it is right now really stands against the teachings of Jesus. It's not so.
Well, I wouldn't say everything. In fact, I'd be a long way from that. There's a lot of good altruistic stuff that is done by the Catholic Church and by the Vatican. But the status as a nation state, I would agree with you. I think it kind of flies in the face of what Jesus was all about. Thank you, Joe, for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And I'm not calling for some big campaign, you know, to end the nation state status of the Vatican. I just think it's a fascinating topic for discussion. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour, and Pope Francis is now with us, and, you know, I wish him the very best. I really, really do. I was reading the wiki page during the break, and this was one thing that jumped out at me. This is, of course, you know, Wikipedia can change in a minute, so... But this is what it was as of 5 minutes ago. As Cardinal Bergoglio, the guy who's now the Pope, became known for personal humility, doctrinal conservatism. He's very, very opposed to gay marriage, by the way. He said it's something from Satan. But in any case, doctrinal conservatism, or doctrinal, and a commitment to social justice. A simple lifestyle has contributed to his reputation for humility. He lives in a small apartment rather than in the palatial bishop's residence. He gave up his chauffeured limousine in favor of public transportation, and he reportedly cooks his own meals. If so, good on him. I mean, that's the kind of St. Teresa kind of reform that... Well, we'll see. Apparently, he's also the guy who almost got Ratzinger's seat. When Cardinal Ratzinger of Germany was selected. And according to the New York Times, he's the first non-European pope since Christopher Columbus arrived in Hispaniola, in North America. So we'll see how this shakes out. John, in Statesville, North Carolina, your thoughts on the new pope?
Well, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I get to hear a lot from you from RTTV and... you're a little more left than I like, but I like your frank opinion.
Okay, thank you.
You're pretty much correct most of the time. But as a Christian who was, you know, converted by a power greater than mine, you know, greater than human, and then in a matter that even my logic agrees with, the Pope carries no weight in my life. The Roman
Well, you're not Catholic.
Yeah, but, you know, if something is good, it's good. The the organization of the Catholic Church has been a worldly organization. It's been as political and militant as any other to put forth their own means and their own ideas about reality that people who have the true faith of Christ do not accept because it's not true.
Well,
so
okay.
I would wish them the best.
Yeah, yeah. John, thank you for the comment. Yeah, what I don't want to get into in this discussion is Catholicism really Christianity? I don't want to get into Catholic bashing. I got it that you think that your form of Protestantism, individual sect or faith or denomination you have been baptized into is better than Catholicism. Cool. You have your right to that belief. I'm sure, most Catholics would disagree. There's really no place for that, I don't think. Pat in Somerset, Wisconsin. Hey, Pat.
Tom, good to talk to you again.
Thank you for calling.
You started at your program out and asked the question, is the Roman Catholic Church still empire? And I say it is. And it's,
well, it's still a nation.
Pardon me?
It's still a nation state, so.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But it's worldwide, and many people are not aware of Opus Dei. And I'm referring, I got in my hands right here a book I just bought this week called by Matthew Fox. He's one of the premier priests who was kicked out of the Catholic Church a number of years ago. His newest book, The Pope's War, is just out in paperback. It is the scariest book I have ever read in my lifetime, and I read 200 to 300 books a year, have all my life.
Wow.
And most Catholics don't know, and I did not know this. I had the same impression, Tom, as you did. I was impressed with years for John Paul. And I am absolutely convinced that the Pope that just resigned, Ratzinger, and he did resign.
Yeah.
This is not in the mainstream press, but he was forced out because of the cover-ups, the pedophile situation. Yeah. The biggest sin there of the Catholic Church is not the pedophile situation, but the cover-up.
Yeah, and they have used, to some extent, the diplomatic passport and immunity and, come to Rome and we'll stash you thing, and it has stuck in the craw of many people around the world. Although that's and Opus Dei is a fascinating thing. Pat, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to KTNF. I believe, I'm going to say, and then not go much farther than this, that I find it fascinating too that Scalia and Thomas are members of a church here in Washington, D.C. that has been associated with Opus Dei in the public dialogue. And, to what extent Opus Dei is really there, who knows. And do not under any circumstances go to the website Knights, KnightsTemplar.com, because then you'll find out who really runs the world. Bill in Etheridge, Tennessee. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Tom. First time caller. Love your show.
Thank you.
One thing I've always found strange is you'd mentioned earlier in your show about the Catholic Church and how they used to have a standing army, the Crusades and all of that, and no longer do.
Well, that was part of the peace treaty that they signed with the country of Italy after the Italians rose up and threw out the Catholic Church as their form of government.
Right.
If my recollection of history is correct, I'm pretty sure it is.
Well, one thing I've found strange is you've got Switzerland, which has always been a neutral country in every war, doesn't get involved in wars. And yet it's the Swiss military that guard the Vatican.
Well, yes and no. The Swiss guard who guard the Vatican are actually, again, I'm not an authority on this. My understanding, when I was there, I saw them, I met them, I was interviewed by them, I was frisked by them. we had to go through this whole, it's like going to see the Pope is like going to see the president. You've got to go through a whole security process. And my understanding of the Swiss Guard at the Vatican is that these are all young men. They're all men, first of all. And they're young men who had basically applied for it. It's purely voluntary. And whereas the Swiss Army, the Swiss military is not. And it's, there's essentially a draft in Switzerland. And that they applied for it, with the intention of going off and serving the Vatican. and that they're all, you know, so they have to be Catholics. And there's a lot of Protestants in Switzerland, and a lot of people who are kind of non, whatever, you know, a-religious, and that it's not any long. I mean, it might. I don't know if there's like a contract between the Vatican and the government of Switzerland. This is where I don't know the details, or whether this has just become an institution. But I do, but I do find it interesting that it is young Swiss men who guard the Vatican. And I wonder if that's a vestige. I wonder if that was something that the Vatican had worked out. I mean, there was a time when the Vatican controlled most of Europe, that I don't know if they controlled Switzerland or not, but they certainly controlled the country around it. And maybe this goes back to that. Maybe this was the Swiss Guard was to protect them from the Italians after the Italian Revolution.
That could be.
I don't know.
One other thing, yeah. There used to be a show on, I think there was a 7-part series called Ancient Prophecies,
mm-hmm.
and they went through Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce and all the different prophets, and Nostradamus prophesied that this would be the last pope to ever be, and that his name would be the same as the first pope. So I don't know what the first pope's name, I guess Peter would be the first pope technically, that Jesus built his church on.
Yeah, you know, according to Catholic lore and theology, I guess so.
Right.
You know, Bill, I've read some of Nostradamus, but I find it impenetrable. Thank you for the call. Interesting question. Timothy in Columbus, Ohio, you think Israel represents world Judaism?
Yeah, actually, that is an argument to present.
Who is then?
It does attempt to.
If the Pope is the head Catholic, who's the head Jew?
Well, believe it or not, it's the head of Orthodox Judaism in Israel, because the Orthodox sect, they set religious policy for the entire state, and they have final say over whether any policies, even state policies, are contrary to Orthodox.
Yeah, I don't know how, to what extent that is solid and binding, because for example, there's a debate going on in the Knesset right now about whether or not religious Orthodox Jews should be exempted from the military. They have been
right.
up to this point because they've had that kind of power.
No, it's not binding by law.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Listen,
thank you. Because Israel is a democracy.
Overwhelming pressure is intense.
Right, here's the difference. Israel is a democracy, and I don't think that the Catholic Church is a democracy. I could be wrong, but if it is, it's one that is very, very narrowly defined in terms of who gets to vote and who has a say and all that kind of thing. And so I don't think that it's a good analogy.
Have you looked at all the parties, though, in Israel, the official parties that run, even though you might describe it's just like here. If you look at all the parties and look at the differences of opinions on positions, they're actually very limited on a number of things. There's broad concurrence on a wide number of issues.
On many issues, there's also broad dispute on many issues. Timothy, there's some very, very progressive parties in Israel. There's some very, very conservative parties in Israel. Because they have proportional representation, they have a more diverse body politic than we do.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, this is one of the things that, you know, Ralph Nader used to say, you know, Israel can have 7, 8, 9 political parties, so why can't the United States? Well, because we don't have proportional representation. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Frank in Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind today?
Thank you for taking my call. What caught my ear was your tone, the tone of your description of this new pope, mm-hmm. what was going on. And it's so different than what you hear on the mass media, the NBC, ABC, all that kind of stuff. And it's so much, it reminds me so much of something that I think Jesus said. He was quoted saying, if they ask you who I am, tell them I am just a man. Now, if you treat people with this adoration, you know, it becomes almost like they're more than human.
Mm-hmm.
They're more than just a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your the tone of your coverage, although it's respectful. And I think it points to the fact that this is not, we are not talking about Jesus Christ, the second coming here. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the elevation of a man through a corporate sort of setup.
Right. And a state setup. Yeah, Frank, thank you for your kind comments, and I hope that was a compliment, and I appreciate it. Congressman Raul Grijalva is on the line. I want to pick him up because he's making news here. So I appreciate the call, Frank. Congressman Grijalva, the U.S. Congressman from the 3rd District, Grijalva, G-R-I-J-A-L-V-A, .house.gov is his website, also chairman or co-chairman of the House Progressive Caucus. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the invite. I appreciate it.
Great to have you with us. I understand that now that Paul Ryan has proposed his wackadoodle budget to voucherize Medicare and basically make poor people poorer and rich people richer, that the House Progressive Caucus has an alternative.
Yes, and today, outside of where Paul Ryan was conducting his committee hearing on his budget, Ryan 2, because it's the same thing as the one last time.
Yep.
A budget that's premised on eliminating health care reform, and a budget that's predicated on continuing, if not widening, the opportunities that have been given to corporate America in the past without any responsibility to help contribute back to the American people. And it's been so... That's going to be the budget. That's the one they're going to put on the floor. And as we've done the two previous years, we're providing a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And a very stark choice from.
So tell me the details of the progress. First of all, what's the name for the progress? It's called Back to Work Budget?
The Back to Work Budget.
Okay. So the House Progressive Caucus has put together the Back to Work Budget. Y'all are proposing this as an alternative to the Paul Ryan, Devastate America budget. What are the details of your budget?
Well, central to that is the job creation component, and without getting buying into the rhetoric that this is all about spending cuts and it's about deficit reduction, and the fate of the world as we know it will be doomsday if we don't do the Ryan budget. Ours, it's common sense. An economy cannot get better unless people are working. Our families can't get better unless people are working, and we have to make some investments.
Mm-hmm.
And in making those investments, and requiring for fairness in our tax policies, we generate revenue to both secure the programs that Americans have, their insurance programs, Medicare, and Social Security. Secure them without tampering. We don't even mention Social Security in our budget. That is that's a trust fund. That is separate. Should never be dragged into these conversations at any level.
Totally agree.
And we secure Medicare without having to devastate and cut benefits and raise eligibility and privatize portions of it and create some phony voucher system that is only going to enrich the insurance companies and do nothing for the recipients of health care under Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
But job creation, trying to, as sad as it might sound, to bring that the jobless rate in this country to under 4% within 3 years. And it should be full employment. We all know that. And the circumstance and the recession that was created by bad policy and unpaid wars, we now have to look at trying to get back to under 5% as an unemployment rate for the country. And we have funding education, aid to the states so that this recession gap in state budgets for 2 years, return to the states revenue, allowing the rehiring of primarily public employees from teachers to cops.
Mm-hmm.
And public works jobs program.
So you're suggesting putting people back to work instead of austerity.
Yeah, and still, in terms of the of reducing the deficit, because the American people have been fed this, that the deficit is the reason that we're in this situation, but in reality, it's the lack of investment that also put us in this situation.
Yeah.
We come to within 3 or 4% at the end of 10 years, very similar to Ryan's, to a deficit
to a balanced budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so,
but we're not. You know, everybody's talking, including the president, talking about generating revenue that's revenue neutral. No, we think that the revenue that is generated needs to be reinvested and needs to be used to mitigate some of the cuts that we're talking about with sequestration and the Budget Control Act.
Yeah.
And transition fee,
mm-hmm,
for Wall Street, doing the kind of the tax bias that has existed, ending that.
So you're proposing a STET tax, securities transaction excise tax.
Yeah, and
that's great.
And reducing the deductions, reducing the subsidies to corporate America, they're doing very well.
Yeah, corporate America definitely is doing very well. Congressman Raul Grijalva, thanks so much for the back-to-work budget, sir.
And thank you for calling. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. Yes, we have a new pope. It's Pope Francis. Well, we, the world's Catholics, have a new pope. Well, actually, we, because the Catholic Church is a country as well. And, you know, we will get back into that a little bit. Raul Grijalva was just on. The House Progressive Caucus has introduced their back-to-work budget. The president just left meeting with the House Republicans, or a group of House Republicans, on Capitol Hill a few minutes ago. And apparently is taking the position that, you know, you want to cut more stuff, you got to raise some taxes. And, of course, the House Republicans are going rather hysterical about that. And meanwhile, this whole gun issue, the NRA, much like the old National Smokers Association, the various smokers' rights associations funded by the tobacco companies, the NRA, of course, funded in large part by the firearms manufacturers, as their front group, Wayne LaPierre, his $1 million a year to be their spokesman, are out there, you know, quite hysterical about all this stuff about guns. And Senator Jennings, the Maryland State Senator, a Republican from District 7, his website, jbjennings.com? Do I have that right, JB?
Yes, sir.
Senator Jennings, forgive me. And at Senator Jennings is available for the information. You're either taking a position that is incredibly sane, or you're fetishizing guns. And I haven't been able to figure out which it is. Tell us your story.
This has really nothing to do with the whole gun debate. This has to do with common sense in the classroom. Teachers are... their hands have been handcuffed by the boards of education with these zero tolerance policies. Kids in the classroom, elementary school kids, they can't be kids. You know, on the playgrounds, they can't put their fingers in the shape of a gun and go and play cops and robbers. And you hear story after story of kids doing this and getting suspended. You know, we just had a case in Maryland where a kid was at lunch eating a Pop-Tart, and he chewed a Pop-Tart into the shape of what appeared to be a gun, and he was suspended for it.
Right.
And what this legislation is saying is, I think it's ridiculous.
So what you're saying then is that you don't believe in local control. These school boards are local. And to hell with what the parents want, to hell with what the communities want, you want the state of Maryland to come in and say, you cannot expel a child for chewing a Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun and using it to whatever. You know,
what I'm saying is the opposite. I want local control. The school boards aren't stepping up to take care of this.
The school boards are stepping up. They're making rules that you don't like.
they're doing zero tolerance policy.
Right. They're making rules you don't like.
I don't agree with.
Right.
And a lot of
course.
Parents don't.
Yeah, I got that. But if enough parents don't agree with it, they will throw out those local school boards. They don't need big government. They don't need the entire state of Maryland coming in telling them, you know, what their kids should or shouldn't do. Shouldn't they? I mean, and I don't understand why I'm arguing with a Republican about big government.
Not with the school boards we have here, because these are appointed school boards. They're not elected.
Appointed by whom?
Appointed by the governor of Maryland.
So the school board for Baltimore is appointed by the governor of Maryland. The school board for a little town, you know, Jackson, Maryland, is appointed by the governor?
School board for Baltimore County, Maryland, is appointed by the governor of Maryland. School board for Baltimore City, Maryland, is appointed by the governor of Maryland.
Well, that's wrong.
Well, we've tried to change that. We can't get elected school boards because we can't get it through the legislature. So we can't get these school boards to act. These parents are they're upset. Their kids are getting in trouble for these what I consider to be ridiculous situations. And if we can't get the school boards to act, this is our last option. There's nothing else to do. Do I want to do this? No. But I have no other option.
Right. Well, you call it the Reasonable School Discipline Act of 2013, and it just the first sentence kind of lays out what it's all about. For the purpose of prohibiting a principal from suspending or expelling a student who brings to school or possesses on school property a picture of a gun, a computer image of a gun, a facsimile of a gun, or any other object that resembles a gun but serves another purpose. Prohibiting the principal from suspending or expelling a student who makes a hand shape or gesture resembling a gun, you know, and it goes on from there, that sort of thing. Why guns? What about pornography? What about, you know, there's lots and lots of things that kids can get expelled for. Giving the middle finger to a teacher. I frankly don't see where that's threatening. Do you think that a kid who gives the finger to the teacher should be expelled?
Expelled? I don't. So I think that's possibly a
or punished.
Absolutely.
Okay, so yeah. if they give the finger to the teacher, they can be punished. But if they point their finger at the teacher with their thumb up as if it's a cocked gun, then you want to make a law that says that teacher cannot take action against that child.
If you read the bill, if it's done in a threatening manner, then yes, the student should be suspended. But if it's done with kids playing around on a playground, with kids being kids, then I don't think they should be suspended.
But the person who's the arbiter of that is the teacher. And the teacher is, you know, the teacher in this case of the Pop-Tart and, has already said, you know, that apparently this kid was freaking out other kids, was doing it in a threatening fashion. So why the law?
Because the school boards have handed down these zero tolerance policies that there is no discretion on the teacher's side. It's the teachers have to report it, the kid's suspended. Zero sum game, that's the way it's going to be.
Aren't there, I understand some people kind of devote their lives to guns, and in fact, you held a fundraiser where you could come and shoot a automatic or semi-automatic weapon and to raise funds for your political campaign?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you're into guns. I got that. I'm a target shooter. I'm into guns, I guess, but I don't think of them as a religion.
And neither do I. I'll be honest with you. I have a farm. I have one gun.
Yeah. So it seems like, you know,
for whenever I need it, if I have a cow that's hurt, and
yeah,
unfortunately I have to put down.
Yeah. Is this not a problem that's not in search of a solution? I mean, do you really need to use the heavy hand of state government to control what principals and teachers are doing in schools?
My hope for this bill is exactly what it's doing. It's causing people to talk about it, and it's starting the discussions.
Right.
It's been frustrating in this state with what's been taking place in these school boards, in these classrooms, for what these kids have had to deal with, and these parents. They're frustrated.
Sure.
We can't get these school boards to make any changes.
Why not push legislation called the local control legislation? Because, in my opinion, this goes way beyond whether or not a kid is making the symbol of a gun. I mean, there's so many different things. You know, it could include anything. I mean, that could be a dimension of bullying, for example. If you've got a kid who's chronically bullied, and a bully, you know, and a bullier in a way that just seems totally normal, just points at, you know, click, you know, like a gun gesture. If I was the teacher, I'd want to throw that bully out of the classroom. But according to your legislation, I wouldn't be able to.
No, again, if it's done in a threatening manner, in a violent way,
But see, you know, the bully has, you know, there's a dynamic between bullies and kids who are bullied where the bully doesn't have to look threatening to anybody outside at all. But anybody who knows what's going on knows that that gun symbol is actually a threat. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
There's subtleties here. Shouldn't you be introduced? I would totally support you, Senator Jennings, if your legislation was the Local Control Act. You know, school boards shall be elected by local citizens. Only parents who have children in the schools. Well, actually, it should be the entire community. Anybody who lives in the school district can elect the school board. And let's just leave it at that and let them make their own decisions.
I've done that. I put a bill in for another. I represent two counties. Harford County, we were able to get a bill in. We could not get a fully elected school board, but we were able to get what's called a hybrid, so it's partially elected.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to make a change.
Well, it's a step.
We can't get it in Baltimore County, Baltimore City. That's why we're trying to do this, to get the school boards to act. Do I want this legislation? No. We're trying to get them to talk.
Okay, so you're trying to... This legislation is more symbolic than... Oh, interesting. JBJennings.com, the website. Senator Jennings, thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So should there be state laws that say teachers can't expel kids for going bang? Past the hour, taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week here on the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. And so, Raul Grijalva, the president. By the way, the president meeting with the Republicans today. I'm very concerned that he's going to end up, I'm very concerned. I'm not at all concerned. So let me share both sides of that. On the one hand, I'm very concerned that the president is going to end up cutting some kind of a deal with the Republicans where he puts in a chain CPI, for example, for veterans benefits and Social Security. And, you know, people are getting screwed. On the other hand, because the president keeps drawing this line in the sand and saying, but if you're going to make me do this, which is really going to make me unpopular with my base, you're going to have to charge your rich people more taxes. And the Republicans are like, what? Charge rich people taxes? Oh, we can't do that. They pay our golf trips to Scotland, and they pay our fundraising, and they keep us in office, and we got to have our rich people, say the Republicans. So, you know, we live in interesting times. Interesting. Joshua in Parkville, Maryland. Hey, you wanted to talk about the students being suspended for making gun gestures at each other.
For playing cops and robbers. I'm only 26 years old, so granted it's not too long ago since I've been in school, but I mean, if the rules were the same back then, I would have been suspended every year I was in elementary school. I mean, some of these rules are just ridiculous.
Well, Joshua, we're not talking about kids playing cops and robbers, to the best of my knowledge. My understanding of what has happened is that the kids who have been basically busted by teachers for making gun gestures at other kids are kids who that was just part of their repertoire of bully behavior.
Actually threatening a kid with a gun gesture, saying, I will kill, making a gesture saying, I will kill you,
right?
Then yes, you should be suspended, expelled.
Or just, you know, you get kid A, you know, bully, you get the bully kid who has beat up the bullied kid on numerous occasions, and he starts making gun gestures at the bullied kid. If I was the bullied kid, and, you know, speaking as a kid who in 1 year when I was in elementary school, there was Dennis was his name, was a bully. So I had to walk around, you know, walk an extra block to get home to avoid his house. And it wasn't just me. I mean, there were several of us that he would just beat the bejesus out of any chance he got. You get real sensitive to when people are threatening you, and it may not look like a threat to outsiders. Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I understand, but that's a completely different situation.
Well, right after a mass school shooting, if a bully starts using gun gestures, that just seems like, you know, it's added a new way, a new, you know, instead of giving a kid a fist which is like, boy, am I going to get you later or on the playground.
That's a completely different situation. There's a difference between actually threatening and bullying someone and actually just being a kid, playing soldier, playing cops and robbers.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I don't think that any of these teachers are busting kids for just playing cops and robbers.
On the contrary, I've heard several stories, actually in my home state, the one I described, for playing cops and robbers and making hand gestures with their, as a gun, in the form of a gun, with their hands. And
I think this has been, you know, the gun nuts have blown this wildly out of proportion, Joshua. And this is the kind of, this is like Fox News's phony war on Christmas. This is another Fox News phony war. And no teacher. Teachers are rational people. They're not irrational, Joshua. They're like you and me. And they're not gonna, you know, no teacher's gonna ruin a kid's life over, you know, making a hand gesture. Come on.
Okay, but at the same time,
I mean, let's
have
some common sense here. I get it where Fox would do it for the ratings. You know, they would hyperventilate about it. But teachers?
Okay.
All right, Joshua, thanks for the call. Sydney in Pollock, Louisiana. Also from Louisiana. Hey, Sydney.
Hey, Tom. I wish you'd quit calling me a gun nut. I mean, I don't call you names.
Okay. People, gun lover.
You can call me a
liberal nut if you want. I don't mind.
If you don't believe that the rights of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed on, does not apply to the people, well, why don't we remove it from all these other amendments like the 1st, 2nd, 4th, 10th, and the 9th where it says by the people, and why don't we get the people, we the people, out of the preamble to the Constitution? Because the people are the people.
You're misreading the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
That's right. It says the rights of the people. It does not say the rights of the state. It does not.
But
say
it's
the
qualified
rights of the
militia. By the predicate that. There, you know, this is to have a well-regulated militia. Now, I realize over the last 3 years, the Supreme Court has discovered in this 240-year-old document the individual right to bear arms, and arguably, if you want to go back to Heller in the last 15 or 20 years, but that has not historically been the position of the Supreme Court, and it's not what the Second Amendment says.
Own a rifle and required you to own ammunition.
Okay, Sydney. What happened to Sydney?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Sydney.
When they required us to get a rifle and own ammunition, and we were to.
I'm listening. Sydney,
we had to show up to train with our own guns. We kept them at home.
Yeah. Sydney, could it be that if. You know, if you're going to treat the Second Amendment and the Constitution, for that matter, as a sacred document written by gods from Olympus, could it be that it's wrong?
Well, is it wrong for you to use your microphone because you said, I can't have anything but a flintlock? Well, they didn't have microphones when you were, when they wrote the Constitution.
Point taken. Maybe both First and Second Amendments are wrong. Thanks, Sydney.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But what I would say to Sydney, if you're still watching, Sydney, is that my speech is regulated. There are a number of things I can't do here. I think it's appropriate to regulate guns. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And, interesting. A lot of interesting comments here on everything from kids being suspended to the Pope. Eric in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Eric, you wanted to talk about muskets?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just want to add an additional response to Sydney, who's talking about the right to bear arms. And one thing that's not brought up a whole lot when you're talking about the whole gun argument is that when the Constitution was written, the most skilled marksman could fire maybe 3 to 4 rounds a minute. And, you know, I'm all for having those kind of guns around. And, you know, I don't think guns should be outlawed, but, you know, when the Constitution was written, you know, it was written so that, you know, it could be changed, that things could be added and,
mm-hmm.
and amended. And, you know, at the time it was written, women couldn't vote. Only property owners could vote. African Americans were slaves.
Right.
And
in fact, the Second Amendment is one of those amendments. It was an addition to the Constitution.
Exactly. And if, you know, the founding fathers, you know, had guns that could shoot 800 rounds a minute, they may not want everybody to have those. I know police don't want people to have those. And,
yeah.
you know, people in the military, they don't want to face one of those.
Yep.
They want to have it, but they don't want to face one. And, you know, I just think that, you know, today, if the Constitution was written the same way, you know, I think everybody would be allowed to have a gun.
Well, even in their most extreme interpretation, the Supreme Court has concluded that there is a federal and state and local right to regulate guns. Even though you have an individual right to own a gun, there is also a right to regulate it. Just like I have the right to free speech, but I'm doing it over the public airwaves here, so there are seven words I can't say on the air. You know, that kind of thing. So we'll see where this goes. But yeah, good point, Eric. Thank you for calling, and thanks for listening there in Knoxville. Jerry in Chicago. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Good.
You know, no one's ever mentioned that about the, you know, the finger pointing with the pistol at the kids. But where are the parents? I mean, that's something that should be said, too, that, you know.
Well, if a kid gets kicked out of school, the parents find out about it damn quick.
Yes, but why would you kick them out? Wouldn't you have, you know, try to have a conference or something with the kids?
Oh, yeah,
tell them
of course.
That it's not right before,
well, that's,
just
that's,
suspending them
that's,
right
that's
for what, any act.
Yeah, and this is where I'm saying, you know, the right-wing talk radio and Fox News have turned a non-issue, just like the so-called war on Christmas. They've turned a non-issue into an issue that has reached such a level of hysteria that poor Senator Jennings feels like he has to introduce legislation in the state of Maryland to deal with it. And the reality, the simple reality, is that teachers are rational actors. Rational actors being a libertarian phrase, actually, they're rational people. You know, just like you and me. And they're not. No teacher wants to destroy a kid's life or go through all the hassle of putting the kid in front of the school board or the principal or whatever over something that's trivial. I mean, it's not going to happen. So
yeah, I just believe it's the micromanaging and the children. It's getting kind of crazy. And like you said before, that, you know, they're just trying to divert the real problem with the guns and everything else. They're just trying to take your attention to something else.
Yeah.
You know, instead of the true problems of no jobs, no money and everything else.
Yes. Yes. I think you're absolutely right, Jerry. Thank you very much for the call. Laura in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. You did something over at change.org?
Yes. Well, I took your idea on guns of having having the users licensed and gun registered and insurance,
mm-hmm.
and put it in a petition to the mayor and city council of Albuquerque, New Mexico here. And my petition basically calls for ammunition and guns to be sold in adult-only venues, like we currently do with pornography,
mm-hmm.
that there be a license for gun users so that we know that they have an appropriate background and that we know that they have training to use a gun,
mm-hmm.
that the gun be registered, and that the gun be insured,
right.
so that any victims can be compensated.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
I've put that on signon.org,
mm-hmm.
and over half the people that have read it have signed it.
That's great.
And we've gotten some wonderful comments on it, and I plan to take it to the city council on their April 1st meeting here and deliver the petitions also to the mayor the week before, the last week in March. So I thought I would call and let you know and let your listeners know if they're in Albuquerque or if they know somebody in Albuquerque to have them go to signon.org and sign my petition there.
Okay, signon.org, did you say?
Signon.org.
Okay, great. Thank you, Laura, and good on you for your activism. And, you know, we should start one of these over at the White House website, you know, where if you get 25,000 people signing up, then the president has to respond to it.
Yeah, I, I think so, but I think people need to start locally. Now,
yeah, I agree.
Albuquerque is special because 25% of the population of New Mexico lives in the city of Albuquerque.
Hmm.
So instead of going to the state house or, you know, for legislation, I think if we can start something here in the city, we'll have a big impact.
Yeah.
After all, the city of Albuquerque has 1,500 nuclear warheads in the city limits.
What?
And if we can, yeah, 1,700.
Wow.
The city of Albuquerque, if the city of Albuquerque were to succeed from the country, succeed from the United States, we would be the second or third largest nuclear power in the country, in the world.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, if we can control them,
yeah,
we should be able to control handguns. So, you know, I think we're in a special situation here in Albuquerque, and I think if we can get the city ordinance in, it could make a big impact nationwide, as hopefully other cities could.
Well, Laura, I wish you the very best, and again, I tip my hat to you and for your activism. Thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing that with us, and thanks for listening to KABQ. Matt in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Matt, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I was thinking the selection of the new pope from South America might really complicate Marco Rubio's chances in 2016.
Why is that?
I think that the new pope from Latin America probably will advocate for immigration reform inside the United States at some point. Marco Rubio is going to resist the immigration reform that's needed inside the United States. I think it's possible that Marco Rubio might find himself, his position will be to the right of his own spiritual leader. If Marco Rubio is a Catholic, can you run for president and disagree with your own spiritual leader?
Well, you can. I mean, John Kennedy did. John Kennedy gave a famous speech. In fact, I listened to it this morning. I was thinking about playing it on the program and then decided not to. But, you know, in which he said that, you know, he sees a nation where no religious figure will have any say in political dialogue beyond their own, beyond the, you know, the limits of their own church. I'm paraphrasing here.
And I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah, and Marco Rubio, with regard to immigration, I mean, he's taken several different positions on immigration over the last few years now, and he's just going to, you know, he's going to lick his finger and stick it up to the wind and say, which way is the wind blowing, you know, come primary time. And then he'll probably do like Mitt Romney did, and whatever gets him, you know, if he can get the nomination in the primary, and I don't believe he will. I think it's going to be Jeb Bush. And I think he's going to go up against Hillary Clinton, assuming that both of them are, you know, 2 years down the road in good health and still enthusiastic. But if Marco Rubio tries to do that, he's just going to take whatever position gets him there. But that's an interesting theory that, you know, that the Pope is going to.
If you think that Jeb Bush is going to beat him in the primary, do you think then Marco Rubio, it's advantageous for him to go to the left on immigration from Jeb Bush? I mean,
it's hard to say because, you know, Marco Rubio would be the logical vice presidential candidate because he's a young guy and he's Hispanic and all that kind of stuff for pretty much any Republican except Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is married to a woman who is Hispanic, a Latina, and Jeb Bush speaks fluent Spanish, so he doesn't need Marco Rubio. And so, you know, this kind of puts Marco Rubio on the outside looking in. And I think ever since his big gulp moment, his political career has been kind of toast. It was sort of like when Michelle Bachmann looked at the wrong camera for her entire rebuttal to the president.
Exactly.
You know, it's just he's become a joke, which is unfortunate. But Matt, thanks a lot for the call. It's thought provoking. It's thought provoking stuff. I appreciate it. Terry in Alcoa, Tennessee. Hey Terry, what's up?
Hey Tom. There's a lot of misinterpretation about the Constitution going on here. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, are separate from the Constitution.
That's correct. They were ratified several years after the Constitution was ratified.
Yes, they were ratified later, and the Congress is not given permission to alter the first 10 amendments. When you go to Article 1 and you start reading the Constitution, yes, it says the Congress may alter. But the first 10 amendments, nowhere is the Congress given permission to alter those first 10 amendments.
Where does it say that?
And the second.
You're asserting a negative. You're saying that that Congress is prohibited from amending the first 10 amendments. I don't know where that is in the Constitution.
It would have to be a constitutional convention to even think about.
No, all it takes is a simple amendment. All it would take is a simple amendment.
No, because the founders made it clear, starting with Article 1, at the end of every article, that they give them Congress permission to alter. But in the Bill of Rights, nowhere do they give Congress permission.
Right, but that doesn't mean that Congress can't do it. I mean, maybe you're right, but I don't think so, Terry. I think that anything can be amended. Thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I'm looking at, like, for example, the end of Article 2. It doesn't say anything about you can modify this. At the end of Article 1, it doesn't say anything about you can modify this. Check in with Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service. Talk Radio News Service brought to you, by the way, by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Give a goat to help a rescued slave and receive a photo of your goat and the person you helped. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I am great. I am loving reading your book, Sideswiped, by Bob Ney. It is brilliant. Everybody who is listening or watching should get a copy. It is such a shocking story of how things are done in Washington, D.C.
Well, thanks for the comments. You know, it's gotten the attention, of course, the Boehner line, and but there's much, as you know, there's much more to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of aspects to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You get a sense of how things actually work in this town.
And the prison system part, too, I want to make sure people knew.
Yes, absolutely. So the whole kind of struggle with alcohol thing. So what's going on in the world today, other than we got a new Pope? Pope Francis
is
now
in
charge.
And I got to tell you, the big, big news, there's White House tours again.
White House what?
White House tours.
Oh, tours. Oh, they decided to take the focus away from take that away from Fox News' hysteria machine.
I have to mention it because, you know, I talked to Ellen Ratner, and when this all came about, just having operated in Washington as I did, I thought, oh, Katie, bar the door. Somebody's going to grab this, which Fox did, and run this thing into the ground. Then the next thing you were going to see were stories of children who, you know, were ill and were going to go to the White House. I mean, everything under the sun.
Right.
So they reinstituted the tours today. And, of course, the Capitol was the same where they have their tours. But I wanted to mention it because it's a big deal, at least up in Washington, D.C. The dueling budgets got the What should we say? The proof in the pudding, the Paul Ryan budget, which kind of does that not address his campaign with the Medicare issue?
Yeah, except I mean, you know, yes, he voucherizes Medicare, but he doesn't give any details of where these cuts are going to come from or what loopholes are going to be closed. He just says Congress will do it.
And I love 10-year projections.
Hmm.
Somebody can say this is what we're going to have coming in, and this is what we're going to spend in 10 years. Doesn't work that way. So I think some of the upfront loaded details are non-existent.
What are your thoughts on Patty Murray and the Democrats' budget? We talked with Raul Grijalva, and we had him on about putting people back to work, the back to work Progressive Caucus budget, which I think is great. But what about the Democratic, the more official Democratic budget that Patty Murray has? She laid that out yet?
Yes, she did, and I think she really got close to revenue-wise. The Republicans will not be able to argue that it's short. It's maybe, I don't know, $200 million difference, which is nothing in the scheme of Washington. But I think it was important in the sense that, you know, she laid a budget out.
Right.
And, of course, the president, the big news was on the Hill today, went into a closed-door session, which I frankly, honestly, thought would be a little less contentious than it was from the Republican side. From what I understand from my friends, it was fairly, I won't say riotous.
You mean Republicans were yelling "you lie" at him, that kind of thing?
No, they kept that guy quiet. But I guess they went over A to Z, including the election. The election. Well, it's done, or what he said during the election, or you know, how it ran, or blah blah blah. I mean, Bill Clinton came to address us when we were there, and I must say it was in the height of a lot of things, but I thought it was very respectful, you know, towards Clinton. So I think the rancor here, not that they have to sit there and smile at President Obama, but I think to raise elections are done. You know.
Yeah.
I will give Obama credit for going to the Hill, though, you know, to do this.
Yeah. My friend Joe Madison, whose opinion on such things I respect tremendously, makes the point, has made the point on this program, in fact, that President Obama is treated, an African-American president, is treated in ways by, in particular, Southern white legislators in the United States that no white president has ever been treated. And I think there's something to that. I don't think it's the whole thing, but I think there's a piece of it there.
Well, I saw a picture that somebody put up with his wife the other day. It was so disgusting. I eliminated him off of a Facebook thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's there's just sometimes a beyond partisan when it's come to this president. Not that he, you know, has been perfect. And I think he could have went up on the Hill 4 years before, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was a staff decision. But at the end of the day, and I share in my book, when he walked in there, comments of people saying, you know, he's going to follow this system in the Senate. That's in my book.
Yeah.
And I turned to my chief of staff. I said, he might be the first black president.
Yeah.
And so I think there's been some rancor against him from the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. In part because of his race. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yes.
What else is going on in the world, Bob?
Well, and again, the new pope is the worldly event.
Mm-hmm.
The new ambassador, career ambassador, Deborah Jones, to Libya. Who's going to have it's a tough road to hoe to go over there, but she is
right.
A career diplomat. She was in Kuwait last we spoke.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to hold her up, John McCain, till he gets Spain. I think John McCain would have filibustered the Pope if he could have, till he gets a Benghazi answer.
Yeah.
But I think.
Well, he's gotten lots of Benghazi answers. He just hasn't gotten anybody saying, we did something wrong. Please impeach the president. That's really what John McCain wants to hear.
Well, they keep honestly going after things that have nothing to do with Benghazi.
Right.
Richard Cordray, it's a wonder they don't hold him up for Benghazi, his appointment.
Well, they're holding up Richard Cordray because they don't want the Republicans do not want there to be a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They do not want the American people to be protected from the predations of the billionaire banksters who fund the Republican campaigns.
Richard is from Ohio, and Richard does not have rancor amongst, I served with him in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
You don't find people say, oh, incompetent Richard Cordray. He was attorney general. And he just doesn't have that type of, you know, attitude put towards him. So I do think it is the fact they just don't like that whole agency.
Yeah, and you're
hold him up till it's rearranged.
Yeah, and your word carries a heck of a lot of additional weight. If our listeners don't know that you're a former congressman from Ohio, so you didn't just know this guy; he was a colleague.
Correct, and on the other side of the aisle from him.
Yeah. So if anything, you know, you would have the dirt on him, and instead you're speaking respectfully of him.
He's a good man.
Yeah, he was a Democrat, you were a Republican. Bob Nay with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Bob, thank you for the news report today, and once again, thanks for writing this brilliant book, Sideswipe, which is in bookstores everywhere right now. Bob Nay. We will be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our third hour begins with Pope Francis in charge of the Catholic world. How does the Taliban work? It's a lousy segue, but how does the Taliban work? Well, the Taliban works by keeping people stupid. You know, women are witches, Jews are another species, Westerners are degenerate. Only the wise and powerful Taliban leaders know what the Quran really says, because they're the only ones who can read, write, or tell everybody else what's real. Now, there was a time when the Muslim world was enlightened. They invented the writing and math, for example, that we use today. They were the center of the world for science. But then in some places, the Taliban took over. And don't for a minute think it's really all about religion. Religion is just used to manipulate the useful idiots. It's really about money, power, and control. And that can only be held by thugs like the Taliban when the people are kept poor and stupid. Here in America, there's a new Taliban rising. They fetishize guns, just like the Afghan Taliban. They fear women. They hate education. They want to destroy schools. They want to keep the people stupid and in chains. Our American Taliban, they're the plutocrats and the billionaires who rose to power on the heels of Reagan's trickle-down economics. And now what's trickling down to us is stupidity. As Mark Morford wrote for the San Francisco Chronicle's blog SF Gate, 6% of Americans believe in unicorns. 36% believe in UFOs. A whopping 24% believe dinosaurs and men hung out together. 18% still believe the sun revolves around the earth. Nearly 30% of Americans believe cloud computing involves actual clouds. A shockingly sad 18% to this very day believe the president is a Muslim. Do you believe in angels? 45% of Americans do. In fact, roughly 48%, Republicans and Democrats alike, believe in some form of creationism. End of quote. So why do Americans believe in such absurd things? Well, you know, I suppose some are debatable, but because they're being taught these things in our nation's schools and hearing them from our corporatized media. All across America, our kids are learning from the curriculum of the plutocrats and billionaires, and it's getting worse. In Louisiana, for example, and in Indiana, children learn about how hippies were dirty, rock musicians worship Satan, and climate change is one big lie. But America's new Taliban isn't just controlling what's being taught in our classrooms. They're also dictating what's being shown in America's billionaire-backed, corporatized media. That's where the likes of Rupert Murdoch come in. Thanks to Murdoch, millions of Americans are subjected to the mountains of misinformation and half-truths that pour out of Fox so-called news on a daily basis. There used to be a time in our country when the mainstream media actually had to report on the news. Those times have changed. In 1986, Ronald Reagan ended the FCC doctrine that required radio and TV stations to actually carry real news as a public service. And within 2 years, the money-losing news services had come under network entertainment divisions, and all news decisions since then have been made based on ratings. Oh, and the following year, Rush Limbaugh started his radio show. And now plutocrat extraordinaires, the Koch brothers, are looking to buy several major American newspapers, presumably so they can have something to say about what Americans read in their morning papers. The Cocteopus is interested in buying the Tribune Company newspapers, which includes the Chicago Tribune, the Baltimore Sun, and the Los Angeles Times. According to the Hollywood Reporter, the Cocteopus is, quote, interested in the clout they could gain through the Times editorial pages, end quote. Now, I can talk about all of this openly here because most of the people who will vote for the new American Taliban don't bother to inform themselves with the real news. They don't engage in critical thinking, and they don't want to know what's really going on in the world. They love their ignorance, their bigotry, and most of all, their Fox so-called news. From Thomas Jefferson to John Kennedy. This is why I was listening to Kennedy clips this morning. I know there's a brilliant one out there. I couldn't find it in time for this, but from Thomas Jefferson to John Kennedy, we have always, as a nation, held high the ideal of a quality education for everybody. As Jefferson wrote in a letter to George Wythe, his mentor, in 1786, I think by far the most important bill in our whole code is that for the diffusion of knowledge among the people. No other sure foundation can be devised for the preservation of freedom and happiness. Preach, my dear sir, a crusade against ignorance. Establish and improve the law for educating the common people. End of quote from Thomas Jefferson. Today, America faces a choice. We can hand our country over to the new Taliban and watch as the plutocrats and the billionaires consolidate ever more wealth, power, and control over information in this country. Or we can break up the big corporations and fight for a progressive America where there is a universal, high-quality education for all, a strong social safety net, and a broad and strong middle class. This choice looms large in the current budget debate. Are you paying attention to this? The Republicans, in their budget, Paul Ryan, you know, he's the head of the budget committee, but, you know, this is John Boehner. This is all the Republicans' budget. This is, if there's an R after the name, this is their budget. Cuts funding to education. Voucherizes Medicare. Slashes the social safety net. Cuts taxes on rich people from a top marginal tax rate of 39% down to 25%. And raises taxes on poor people and the middle class, making the rich richer and the poor poorer, and the middle class poorer. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party's budget requires the rich to pay something a little bit closer to their fair share and uses those funds to strengthen education, the social safety net, and the middle class. So, America, it's up to you. Your choice. Do you want the billionaire-backed Republican Taliban in control? Or a Democratic America, where unicorns and dinosaurs are only talked about in children's fantasy books? Because I'm not making this up. In Louisiana and Indiana right now, and probably other states, state dollars, federal education dollars, state education dollars are being given via the voucher process from these right-wing wackadoodle governors to private schools or corporate schools for the education of our school children, and they are teaching that, yes, there were fire-breathing dragons. Think about that for a minute. Yes, there were humans and dinosaurs at the same time. Now, just in case, you know, you missed this part of fourth grade, or you went to one of those privatized schools. The dinosaurs were wiped out 65 million years ago at the end of the Jurassic when a giant meteorite in all probability struck the area around Cancun and created a global warming scenario so severe it wiped out about 65% of all life, including the dinosaurs. 65 million years ago. The most complex and fancy mammal at the time was a little tiny thing that preceded the lemurs, however you say it. Humans, us, Homo sapiens, we came about 165,000 years ago. Not 65 million years ago, 165,000 years ago, which means that there was roughly a 64,900,000 year difference between the dinosaurs and us. But forget about 64 million years. Textbooks in Louisiana and Indiana can't differentiate between the two. Sure enough, humans hung out with dinosaurs. Had to be, right? It says so in the Bible, and it doesn't even say so in the Bible. In the 19th century, some right-wing wackadoodle preacher, Protestant preacher, came up with this idea that the world was 6,000 years old. It's really, the idea is only a couple hundred years old.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So which side are you on? The billionaire Taliban or American democracy? Welcome back, Tom. I'm here with you and John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I really did like how you just went on about religion and the Taliban appearing, you know, in this country, because there are forces in this country that want to exert power more than anything. And, you know, it's really heartbreaking to a lot of Christians, to Jews, to people of other religions who came here to escape that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people who, I mean, I have three generations fought from the Civil War until World War II in my family that, you know, what they were defending this idea of the secular state. This is social, it's called social progress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's blessed by God. I don't see how you can, how else you can look at it. It's just sad that people want to resurrect the kind of problems that existed in the old country, and those very problems are the reasons why a lot of us are here.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I actually. You know, one of the areas where I would celebrate Catholicism and be frightened by some of the more virulent strains of Protestantism, and that is that while it's true that back in the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church made it illegal for anybody to read or write unless they were a priest. In
right.
the modern day world, the Catholic Church is one of the leading forces, particularly in the third world, right. in the developed and developing world.
I myself am from a very traditional Orthodox background. I was Catholic. I married an Orthodox woman, Russian Orthodox, and I'm really familiar with, you know, with those problems. Mm. I really feel very badly. I recently went to a gathering of some friends to celebrate their aunt who was 100 years old, her birthday, and they were Jewish, you know, and I said to two rabbis that I was Russian Orthodox, and the silence from those two individuals really spoke a lot to me. And then I started to investigate after I had seen on Free Speech TV Constantine Sword and saw what had actually gone on in the pogroms. This is not just like people were forced out of Moscow and had to take all their belongings. I'm talking about literally thousands of people who perished as a result of being, you know, stirred up by what really, in a sense, is anti-Christian sentiment
sure.
wrapped in, you know, politics. It's not really Christian at all. Obviously, you know, Christians don't do those kinds of things, but they have done in the past.
In the name of
Christ.
They have
done things like that because they have been directed by their leaders to do that kind of thing.
Well, and this was the point of my rant, was that the billionaires are using, you know, their agenda is all about the money. They're really all about the money. But they're using the Supreme Court decisions that have made corporations people and have made money into speech. They're using them to promote religious intolerance, religious bigotry, and frankly stupidity. These textbooks that are used in these Protestant schools.
Can I say one more thing?
Certainly.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, there's a problem within Christianity and, you know, maybe within all religions, that there's this tension between, you know, people who want to exert this Taliban kind of orthodoxy over human creativity. And that problem was settled in the 19th century, particularly by Nietzsche, who, you know, railed against that kind of religion. It's so oppressive. We are meant to be creative individuals. We are given the talents, and those talents are expressed, within a certain, you know.
I agree with you, John, but Nietzsche didn't stick. I mean, you talk to Bobby Jindal. He's passing out vouchers so that people can send their public school children to schools that are going to teach that people hung out with dinosaurs.
Yeah, can I say one more thing? You know, these people, they're just, they're mentally ill.
I don't think so, John. I think that what has happened, and you know, John, thank you for your call. We really do. There's a lot of other people who want to get onto this conversation, but let me just make this one point. These billionaires are turning people of faith, good people of good faith, into useful idiots for their cause, and they're doing it in the name of religion. And I think that's a terrible, terrible thing. Dwayne in Petaluma, California. Hey, Dwayne, you want to talk about registering guns?
I wanted to talk about the Second Amendment, but first, can I throw a little information on religion? The Spanish government had secularized the missions in California, and Lincoln returned them to the church to get church backing for
the Union for the Civil War.
Yeah, in the Civil War. Yeah, and interesting deals cut. And there was another interesting deal is that. Roosevelt started diplomatic communications with the Vatican if they would withdraw, Father Coughlin's attacks on the New Deal.
Really?
And yeah.
No, I know that the church pulled Father Coughlin off the air, but I thought it was because his rants were getting increasingly incoherent. I mean, he ended up dying of Alzheimer's. He was, and I think that his last year on the air, he had it.
Yeah, well, there was a diplomatic people sent to the Vatican. There had been a break between the 1870s and about the 1930s, 33, when Roosevelt sent someone there. The deal that Roosevelt got, though, was kind of blown up by Truman when he attacked the only two Catholic majority cities in Asia.
Are you talking about Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
I am.
They were Catholic majority cities?
Yeah.
No.
And
these were large industrial Japanese cities. They had to be. It had to be Shintoism.
Check out the. Check out your
history.
Encyclopedia Britannica. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the anyway, the relationship between it wasn't Kennedy. It was Nixon that appointed a diplomat to Vatican Lodge.
Henry Kendall Lodge.
In the modern era.
Yeah. Interesting. Dwayne, thanks for the factoids. I'm going to have to check a couple of them, but it's always good to hear this kind of stuff. I'm telling you, we have the smartest listeners on earth. It's one of the fun things about doing this program. 27 minutes past the hour. What is this Pope's impact going to be on South America? I'm wondering about that.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And he's a Jesuit. Is the celebration of intellect going to become really important? I suspect so. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very iatromizially ugly. The good. Elizabeth Warren, the rookie senator from Massachusetts, kept her winning streak going Tuesday when she lambasted congressional Republicans for once again filibustering the confirmation of Richard Cordray as head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Warren's speech was straight and to the point. She said the American people deserve a Congress that worries less about helping big banks and more about helping regular people who have been cheated on mortgages, on credit cards, on student loans, on credit records. End of quote. A strong Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is necessary to keep the big banks and predatory lenders who wrecked our economy in line. And without a forceful leader like Cordray, it's just another directionless Washington agency. The fact that Republicans won't even bring his nomination to a vote displays the true extent of their allegiance to Wall Street and big business. In this age of austerity and crony capitalism, the American people deserve representatives like Senator Warren who can tell it like it is. Senator Warren, we're lucky to have you. The bad. Pat Fagan and the Family Research Council. Nobody really expects Pat Fagan and his colleagues at the Family Research Council to provide insightful policy analysis, but his Tuesday appearance on Washington Watch was an embarrassment even by his own mind-numbing standards. According to Fagan, the single most destructive decision in the history of the Supreme Court was in 1972, when the court officially recognized the right of unmarried partners to obtain contraceptives in Einstadt versus Baird. That's right. Buying condoms is worse than stealing elections, which is what the court did in Bush v. Gore, and worse than categorizing part of the country as property, which it did in 1857 in Dred Scott. What world do these people live in? And the very, very ugly Stephen Emerson. What? You didn't know the Muslim Brotherhood runs America? According to right-wing conspiracy theorist extraordinaire Stephen Emerson, quote, "The Muslim Brotherhood has penetrated virtually all institutions in the United States, wittingly or unwittingly. The White House, the Department of Justice, Hollywood, the media, the State Department, the publishing industry." End quote. Actually, Steve, it's the other way around. The NYPD and other police departments across the country have spent the past decade infiltrating the Muslim communities across the country, tearing apart friendships and destroying any hope of a normal life. The fact that right-wing nut jobs like Emerson continue to promote the worst sort of Islamophobic lies at the same time as law enforcement agencies treat the entire American Muslim community as a fifth column is very, very ugly. Mind-bogglingly ugly. Steve in Conifer, Colorado, your thoughts on the new Pope in South America?
Yeah, Tom. First of all, let me say I really appreciate your show. I really appreciate I really appreciate your intellect as well.
Thank you.
I've been watching you for several years. I was wondering what you thought the impact of the new Pope might have on the Bolivar social movement in South America.
Well, he has apparently in the past been an outspoken opponent of liberation theology. And the Bolivar social movement is probably more closely aligned with that than they are with, you know, hard right policies. On the other hand, he has also outspokenly defended the rights of the poor. So I don't know. I mean, we're just going to have, everybody's looking at the tea leaves trying to figure out, you know, based on this guy's history, where he's going to go. And there's some very troubling things in his history, and there's some very, you know, heartening things in his history. And for that matter, I mean, who knows how much of his history is actually true. So we'll see. But I think the fact that he is a South American, I mean, it's been over 1,200 years since there was a pope who wasn't European. And 41% of the world's Catholics now live in South America. So I think this is a big deal. I think this is the Catholic Church waking up and smelling the coffee. So
yeah, I hope it's a positive thing for the country. I do.
Yeah, I hope so, too. We'll see where it goes. Thanks a lot for the call, Steve. Larry in Victoria, British Columbia. Hey, Larry, you want to talk about the pope?
Hello, Tom. Are you familiar with the book In God's Name about the pope of 1978?
I'm sorry?
The pope of 1978 was suspected of being poisoned because he believed in the option for the poor.
Right. This was Pope.
Very committed.
You're talking about Pope John Paul, was it not, or was it Pope John?
That's right. Yeah. So, John Paul the First.
John Paul the First. Okay.
So the book In God's Name details what went into his possible execution, poisoning, and why. And it has very much to do with what we're witnessing today in the world. The overarching concern within all faith about whether or not faith is going to be in defense of the poor or is it going to simply be concerned with commercial interests.
Yeah. Very interesting. Larry, I'm not familiar with that book or that theory. I remember when he died, I remember there was a lot of controversy and a lot of concern about it. I remember that when he died, he was reading a book called Imitation of Christ. And so I got a copy of the book and read it. And it was basically a book on mysticism. It was about, you know, connecting with the divine. It was really a rather extraordinary read. I mean, it's been a lot of years since I read it, but and it was rather dense, you know, dense mystical writing. But okay, the title of the book again was
In God's Name.
In God's Name. I'll have to check it out. Larry, thanks
Daniel
for the call.
Yollop.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the heads up. Jeff in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jeff. What's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to follow up on your interview with Raul Grijalva today.
Mm-hmm.
Something he didn't point out that he and other progressives are really pushing is a 250,000 people have signed a petition on socialsecurityworks.org that supports John Conyers' Cancel the Sequester Act of 2013. And, you know, it's a really important thing because this sequester is going to cost 750,000 jobs by the end of the year if it stays in effect. And as you and others have pointed out so eloquently, what we have is a jobs crisis. So this is not a deficit crisis. So it's only going to exacerbate things. And I really think the president underestimated the kamikaze nature of the GOP when he made that deal with them on the sequester. And he maybe overestimated his ability to bring them to the table and be their bargainers. So,
I think this president has consistently underestimated the perfidy, the malice, the dishonesty of the Republican Party. I would guess that probably it wasn't until the third or fourth year of his presidency that he became aware that they had, you know, and that was the fourth year of his presidency, I guess, when, I'm forgetting the name of the author, but who wrote Ask Not What Good We Do, you know, the book about the House of Representatives, in which the author talked about how these 16, 18 members of Congress got together at the caucus room restaurant and the moment that Obama was dancing with his wife at the inauguration balls, they got together and swore basically a blood oath to each other, along with Frank Luntz and Newt Gingrich, to destroy his presidency over the next 4 years. They've kept that oath.
I mean, you know, as people have pointed out, I think, you know, his nature, Obama's nature is one to try and get along with everybody, which hasn't helped. But, you know, he also does need to be pushed from the left. I don't think he is a true progressive, and we need more Democrats to sign on to the Alan Grayson letter as well, because as Norman Solomon wrote in Common Dreams today, it's, you know, there's no excuse for only 30 members of the Progressive Caucus out of 75 or 80 to have signed on to that letter. I mean, every one of them should be signing on.
Yep.
My own representative, Suzanne Bonamici, hasn't signed it. She ran on the grounds that she would protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and she it's a very liberal district that she's in. There's no reason for.
Have you called her office and asked why she hasn't?
You know, I have a couple of times, and they say the old line, oh, well, she doesn't like to divulge how she's going to vote or play her cards in public. Before the vote comes up, you know, it's a excuse. It's not a legitimate reason. You know, some things you have to take a stand on. It's one thing to say you might do something when you're running, but when you have something in front of you that you can take a stand, they need to be doing that more often.
Yeah, I totally agree. Jeff, thank you for the call and thanks for your advocacy out there. Paul in Odessa, Florida. Minute to the break. Paul, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I just wanted to congratulate you on your making the top 10.
Well, thank you.
Talkers
Magazine, yeah. Thank you.
Yes, congratulations. First off, I just wanted to relay a piece of breaking news. The lieutenant governor of our state, Florida, has just resigned. Apparently she's caught up in some scandal involving a charity and a gambling racketeering scheme.
The long arm of Ralph Reed.
Yes. And this is going to really do good, do a world of good for our...
Your main point, Paul, we have just a few seconds left.
Sure. Just a hypothetical. You're concerned about a grand bargain. What if President Obama was to offer the chain CPI in exchange for a Tobin tax,
right,
and, say, a carbon tax and a guarantee that...
Well, I think he's essentially doing that. He's saying we've got to raise some revenue. He hasn't specified which taxes he wants, although he has advocated the Buffett rule, so basically a billionaire minimum tax. They're freaked out about it. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And this is the problem. These Republicans live in fear of Grover Norquist. They signed an oath to him, which in their mind is more important than their oath to the Constitution. 10 minutes before the hour, John Kenneth Galbraith, the modern conservative, is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is... the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Ayn Rand, libertarians, say, you know, it's the best thing for everybody if individuals are selfish. Didn't you know? Actually, turns out not to be the case. Bill, in St. Helens, Oregon. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. I want to real quick about the second amendment, but first, just an aside to the gentleman that called earlier about amending the Constitution. Political Science, 1973, you can pass the 28th Amendment saying the main body of the Constitution and the first 27 amendments are null and void upon ratification, and that is constitutional.
That was my take on it. And he said at each one of the articles, at the end of each article, there's something that says that this article can be amended. And I looked, and I'd never heard of such a thing. But he said it with such certainty, I thought, hey, this guy must have read the Constitution, and maybe I missed something. And I've read it a bunch of times. So I looked, and now there's nothing there. No, sorry.
But on the Second Amendment, I keep hearing everybody calling up saying, my right, my right, my right. Where are these people on our right not to be executed, not to be assassinated without charge or trial? Where are they talking? Our right, I'd like them to get a little more involved in our rights and not just Second Amendment rights. I mean, they're ready to go to the line on the Second Amendment. And yet, at the same time, we're assassinating people overseas where we can arrest people without charge and hold them indefinitely. We can render them to foreign countries to be tortured. Where are these people? If they care, let's care about all of our rights, not just my right to own a gun.
Very well said, Bill. Very well said. Let's start standing up for our Fourth Amendment privacy rights, our First Amendment free speech rights, and freedom from religion rights. our Fifth through Eighth Amendment rights to due process. Well, it's in the body of the Constitution as well, that we shall not be denied due process. And, yeah, I'm totally with you. Very well said. Thank you very much for the call and for bringing that up. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. How you doing, brother?
Hey, brother. It's been a while. If you leave me on long enough, I'll give you my comments as to why they picked the Pope they did.
Uh-oh.
Person to be the Pope, excuse me.
Are you Catholic, Armin?
I was baptized Catholic, yes.
Uh-huh. So, okay.
Okay. But first, what was that website you said, the Knights, if you want to know who really runs the world, you said it was the KnightsOfTemplar.com?
It's Knights, K-N-I-G-H-T-S, Templar, T-E-M-P-L-A-R.com. Don't go there.
Knights Templar.
Don't go there. You will be shocked. KnightsTemplar.com.
Well, oh, I'll be shocked. Your old buddy in Florida will be shocked.
You will. You will.
Why, you think that's who really runs the world?
Well, take a look at the website and figure it out for yourself.
Okay. Now, may I comment on this appointment of this latest pope, why
sure.
it was done?
Sure.
Okay, look at Europe. For all practical purposes, economically and politically, the Catholic Church has it pretty well under, you know, control.
I don't think that's
okay?
the case. I mean, you know, they, you
well,
could make that argument two centuries ago, but not now.
Well, no, I'm not saying, I'm saying they're protecting their interests is what I meant to say.
Well, everybody's protecting their own interests.
Well, okay. So let me finish, please, Tom. With everything with immigration and the pedophile priest and all the bad rap they're getting and having such a struggle to push their amnesty through the Congress and everything, they're going to do it a different way. You know, when Clinton passed NAFTA, okay, what we had was we had the socialization taxation of Canada, and then we had the very poor and living standard and totalitarian Mexico where you can't have weapons, you don't have any unions. If you try to form unions, they send the cops out and beat you up. There's a few ruling families that own everything. And then you go to the rest of the Southern Hemisphere. You go the rest of the Southern Hemisphere, you know, Mexico's 80% Catholic, 75 or 80%. So there's the poster child of dominance of that religion.
I don't,
and then
you, know, you can't blame Mexico on the Catholic
point.
Church, Armin. Okay, make your point. I want to get a couple of the callers in here.
They did it for economic and political reasons because they need an invigorated political arm in the United States in this hemisphere.
Well, if they're doing good, God bless them.
God bless them if they take away the weapons, all the unions.
No, okay. So you think the Catholic Church is part of the conspiracy. Tell you what, you ever hear the Priory of Sion? S-I-O-N? That's another website you don't want to check out. Priory, P-R-I-O-R-Y, of O-F, Sion, S-I-O-N.com. Anyhow, Armin, thanks a lot for the call. Robert in Great Cacapon, West Virginia?
Cacapon.
Cacapon, thank you.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
I'm good to talk to you, Tom, but I'm an English ed major and writer by trade, but my interpretation of the Second Amendment is that these are a list, as your prior caller had mentioned, but they would function in syntax as a positives relating back to militia. In other words, you can eliminate them out of the sentence and still have the complete thought. They just give more meaning to it. You could say, well-regulated militia shall not be infringed.
Right.
These are only elements that go back to a militia and explain more about what their idea of a militia is.
I agree, and there were two reasons why the militia was so important. In the North, the militia was so important because they were suspicious of a standing army, and in the South, the militia was so important because in most of the southern states, in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia, and Virginia in particular, the state militias and the slave patrols were by and large one and the same thing. And
if they really thought that it was important to bear arms, they would have made that an independent sentence of its own, saying the right to bear arms shall not be infringed.
Right. I agree with you. I see that as a qualified right. And, you know, but you got a Supreme Court that's, I need not go there. Robert, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be broadcasting live from the zoo. No, I'm sorry. It's CPAC. The annual Conservative Political Action Conference, where I'll be challenging the movers and shakers in the conservative world, plus a friendly voice. We'll be talking about the sequester, budgets, and jobs of Senator Sherrod Brown. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. It's not a spectator sport. You got to show up. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Get out there and occupy some.
You've been listening to Tom Hartmann. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartmann.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartmann here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartmann program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. Solar World has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.